come from the city of Bay. You are heading the legal side of the We have the chairperson of the governing body, Mr. Daniel Zuda, who will do the first part of the presentation. We have Mr. Tim Gosim Khalidi, who is a governing member representing the government. We have Mr. Sifo Lukele, who is a governing member representing business. We have Mr. Marius Muloto, the governing member representing Labour, sitting right opposite the chairperson, chairing that side, from that side. We have Mr. Afzal Sogeda, who is the National Senior Commissioner, sitting right next to the chairperson and the National Director. We have Mr. Dombi Boikuto, who is the CFO. And Mr. Ronald Benico. And we have Ms. Laura Mseme, who is a strategy and communication. So we have Ms. Dawood Dada, who is the office manager sitting right there. We have Mr. Bolani Nduna, who is a convening senior commissioner. We have Mr. Lubuyo Bono, who is the head of the Central Services Committee. We also have Mr. David Kyle, who is the CFO of the department, and Mr. Freddy Peterson, who is the director at finance in the department. I think this is the team that we brought. I'm not sure if I left out there anyone. Mr. Virgil Sheffield, the deputy director general. Yes. Is the EDG that has allocated the funds to the CMA as part of the departmental budget vote. We indicated last week, Chairperson, that we've allocated an amount of about 770 to the CMA. So, Chairperson, ask the Chairperson of the governing body to do the first part of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable members. My part will be dealing with a quick outline of the presentation that we will be discussing this morning. The first part will be dealing with CMA governance, and the second part will deal with the annual performance plan 2016-2017, as well as the third part will be dealing with the budget review. The CMA governance has shown on the slide. I will not be reading every detail because the information is there just to try and stay for some time. The CMA is a specific body established in terms of Section 15 of the Labor Relations Act of 1995 as amended. The CMA is governed by a governing body made up of a non-executive independent chairperson and representative from government, organized labor, as well as organized business. The members of the GD are appointed through a process managed by NEDLAC and by the Minister of Labour. And the GD is the accounting authority in terms of the CMA. The GD appoints the director who fulfills the functions of a chief executive officer. And the LRA specifically tasks the GD with appointing commissioners and determining their conditions of service. The governing body may not delegate the appointment of a director. It appoints as well as it removes the commissioner, deposits or invests surplus money, as well as the accreditation and the subsidy functions. All of these may not be delegated to any other party. The LRA creates the discretion for the GD to establish committees to assist the CCLA. I just want to take a quick look at the graph on the left hand side. You will see that this is how it is structured at the government level, and the various subcommittees are also shown. I think that is the next one. Then we have got the various members of the governing body, where the chairperson, myself, together with members of the organized business, they are Mr. Moyane, Mr. Dukele, and Mr. Monache, and organized labor. We have got Mr. Jalitali, Mr. Monoto, and Mr. Steve Harris. Now, a quick mention on Steve, of Mr. Steve Harris. Mr. Steve Harris has recently joined us. He comes from the Visa. He is replacing a member of the GP who has served quite a number of years, Mr. Leon Krobelaar, who passed away during the month of December. So Mr. Steve Harris was then appointed by his federation to replace Mr. Krobelaar. On the government side, the representatives are Mr. Mkhalifi, Mr. Mamashela, and Mr. Matsui. The director, as has been introduced earlier, is Mr. Cameron Morajani. Now, at this juncture, I hand over to my colleague, the director, who will be taking us through the latter part of our presentation. Over to you.
Madam Chair. Good afternoon, just first. Firstly, Madam Chair, I have to apologize for posting to the honorable members and the chairperson that the slide, which is on the screen, did not form part of the text that we sent. We thought that it is best that just as a reminder that we put up just this slide with minor questions in there, but this is an important picture that that is quite as well because of the culture international to the institutions that we deal with the petition so that they understand what the petition is about and what we stand for and what our strategy is intended to achieve. And Madam Chair, I must say that when I came today, I thought that it is business as usual and feel where I used to feel that I can't hear, but after listening to my colleague from Nigeria who started the same day with me, I then that feeling changed. To another field. It was supposed to be a safe landing for him. So those hopes and dreams have disappeared. I'm actually in the cooking. So I'm okay on that. So I'm so excited as we proceed. Madam Chair, it is also not my intention to proceed on details on this slide that is now quite of importance to mention that. The strategy of the CCMA conference meeting started April 2015. So as we stand, this strategy has not completed its full term. So the reports that we're receiving as far as the things that we have done so far are things that are up to December 2015. And we have used collection information to complete the entire financial year. And I'm sure when we come back, we will be in a much better position to report to this house, so we can advise you as to our successes and failures in the implementation of our new strategy called Central. Madam Chair, before we proceed, without going into the details of that slide, one of the things that we've learned, which is important to explain, is that the word Central is a very rich word in African life. Because what it means is that the existence of the CCMA as a corporate, not as a corporate citizen, as an institution that embodies 13 social values and social justice principles. That the work that we do and the strategy that we're presenting to you, it should be the strategy that is intended to make a difference in the society that we live in. So it is the result of the system that even when we decided to design the words to mean sentimental, it means that it is what we want to see at the end of this strategy, that we would have made a difference in the lives of South Africa. And also, I must also hasten to mention, Madam Chair, that the assembly strategy which we have presented in the past, which is a predecessor to Central Mexico strategy, is important also to keep a link that one of the things that probably we're moving forward in our mission, and also what we've learned from that previous strategy, which was correct, is that in as much as sufficient detail and objectives must be clear, but we had to resolve and we resolved that the strategy must be simplified so that as we implement it, it must not be a complicated document, because a complicated document with complicated missions and visions will complicate the implementation. So we decided to proceed on a simple plan, and that is why we have only two goals that we've established in terms of the strategy, and only four strategic objectives. And then the rest of the technical and then feed from them. In this way, we thought that it is a good model that we can do more with the people of Lagos. But the key is that whatever we do, in whatever way we're doing it, we must ensure that we are making a difference in terms of this strategy. So that is the essence in as far as this strategy is concerned. And if you look at the strategic objective that we've got, we've got an inward looking strategy that is with the optimization of the organization or to strive to for organizational effectiveness that we've discussed. But also when you look at the first goal, it is more of an outward and external part which deals with the external community, especially when you look at strategic objective one in the slide, which talks about the enhancement of the market to advance stability and growth. This is a market specific goal, and to ensure that the community, especially the labor market, is stable and then it stimulates growth. If it stimulates growth, then it is in the interest of all the people. The one that is more restrictive, which focuses on the workplaces and the system of the property, is the strategic objective, which is with advancing good practices and work and transforming the workplace population. Due to the transformation of the workplace, comes down to the labor leadership act as given first two by the South African Constitution. So, Madam Chair, I will not go into any details as far as the content of that is concerned, but I will take you through some of the key KPM in terms of those strategic objectives so that you can understand what we've done so far and where we are going and where we hope to be at the end of this study. Madam Chair, if I proceed to the next slide, which is what you call the dashboard. Again, Madam Chair, any question we've asked on this slide, but there are certain ones of these portions of the project that I wish to put an emphasis on so that the House can understand our trial as the system is what we've done and where we're heading now. I must say, Madam Chair, like I stated earlier, if you look at that dashboard, it is correct as at the 1st of December 2015. I know that the numbers have changed in some of those aspects that we have there because of the things that have happened beyond December 2020. Yes. Madam Chair, the one I want to start with, which is important, is the one that relates to the CCMA settlement of the 18th strike. As a perfect example, the 18th strike that was referring to, at any point, Madam Chair, the details of the price on which one was referring to, we will be happy to provide. But at this stage, Madam Chair, for example, the strike that makes to pick it up is not included in those numbers because it only happened last year. So you will see that when I said that in terms of the update, in terms of strike that was involved, the numbers are increasing. Madam Chair, the question relating to the assessment of strike, it is quite important. I will elaborate later when it comes to the assessment of strike on how it is important, extremely important to develop, which is also part of our strategic objectives, to create fruitful and lasting and lifelong partnership to ensure that when we set the strike, that it is clear that the duty to set the resource, while it is championed by the system with the power of the party, but we do this with good partnerships. And partnerships, in as far as we're concerned, it is a concept that should drive especially institutions like the CCMA, because what we do and our failures do have a direct impact on those that we serve. So the issues of the resolution of strike, and in fact, I can confirm to you that if there's anything that we will do as the CCMA, using all the resources that we've got, is to ensure that to the extent that we can avoid violent strikes, because I don't think there's any promotion of that, but what is clear and what has come out from all the strikes that we resolve, that there can never be anything done to undermine or to not to recognize a constitutional right of employees to embark on strike, because that's why it is not just a practical it is a constitutional practice for certain constitutions. But our approach to the system has not been just the one party approach. That's what we expected. We balance the interests of employment, ensuring that whatever we set in the process, it is in the interest of the party. Because any resolution of any party that is not in the interest of the party would not be an efficient resolution. So, Commissioner and Madam Chair, I can speak on behalf of all commissioners of the system, including its management, that a resolution of any type, as we do it, which is in the interest of both parties, makes us happy and feel peaceful at night, because we know that it makes a difference to those that we serve. The other issue, Madam Chair, which is also of importance, because sometimes we will acknowledge that we do get complaints that people say that some commissioners are forced to settle. I think that time I was here, we did deal with the question that there are cases where there has been suggestions that our commissioners are forcing parties to settle. Madam Chair, what is important for us as a CCMA and what we've learned in the process is that the question of settling has not been properly explained. And I wish to explain that it is properly understood why it's such a case. Number one, firstly, when you make an award in favor of one party, there will only be the other party that needs to vote more. That's number one. Number two is that some issues that we deal with as a system, if you get only cases where you have unfair dismissals, only where an employer and employee no longer have a working relationship, some issues such as unfair labor practice are still, the relationship between the parties is still there. So if you are able to resolve the dispute between two parties in a manner that is mutually acceptable, peaceful, and also restores the relationship that is intended to proceed, therefore the concept of conciliation and settlement of dispute is the first way to go. This is the principle that we espouse, this is the principle that we promote, this is the principle we wish to continue to promote. We do accept, Madam Chair, that there are the question of the settlement rate, which has been a big discussion in some circles. As an organization that is dynamic and not stable, we have taken a decision, in fact, the government would have taken a decision, that if there are complaints about the issue of the settlement rate, let's review. The system is going to be a decision of the government. But to the extent that this is contributing to build a different allocation, let's review. I can confirm, Mr. President, that we have undertaken, as soon as the supervisor meeting the process, to test whether at the time we took a decision to set a certain settlement rate for the CCMA as an institution and also for the commissioners that have served the people, whether that settlement rate at the level of the setting excludes us the same time. So that investigation, Madam Chair, we have started that research through our investigative department. I can confirm, Madam Chair, with the benefit of hearing the first presentation, that the persons who are involved in the research department CCMA are all full-time employees. So the job security in the five workers is to be sorted out on this issue. It's an important thing because the job security for those that work there, you can develop progression and ensure that you progress as good perception and produce good results for the system. That isn't as far as that issue is concerned, Madam Chair, on the settlement. As you can see, that the system is having 7 out of 10 of the cases that is placed by way of conciliation. Now, the next one, Madam Chair, is the one called Know Your Right. Madam Chair, we have been the beneficiary of the employment law amendments that were effected by this parliament. And when that happened, we have started in MS and ensure that not only the commissioners that serve the people that come or the parties that come for the commission, that the members of the public that we are servicing must also be taught about their law and their rights. And part of that process has been about educating our users to protect them, helping them, to try to cover everyone. This to us is not just about information sharing. To us, this is important because that those that come before us with disputes, it is better to deal with a dispute when your parties before you that are sufficiently educated to deal with on your issue. We do accept that we cannot cover everyone, but to the extent that the budget allows us, as granted by Treasury's Department, we have enjoyed that. We have enjoyed that to an extent that, as you see, it makes a difference to the people that we serve. It is a process that we intend to keep as we continue to do it. I will deal with the budget that was framed as a result of the budget cut that we have suffered because of the fund, which has caused us now to reduce the number and extent which we continue to do. Madam Chair, it is very difficult to teach law once and expect to be consistent. What we started teaching and what we taught, we want to continue to do so that, because when it comes to upskilling and education, it is not an event, it is a process. And now with the constraint that we're suffering at the moment, it's really putting a serious strain in as far as those that are. You will see that the numbers of 20,000 will actually change. So as of that, the intention of the amendment law, not the general trend, we can more than 20,000 of our users to do the position. Now, I want to proceed to the one that deals with jobs. Madam Chair, this is becoming an Achilles tendon in the labor market. We're talking about job saving. The statistics that we have at the moment are available, Madam Chair, if it is required that we produce. One of the things that we have resolved to do with all the partners and stakeholders that we deal with, that all parties in the labor market will have a direct or indirect contribution to make it, ensuring that those that face retention do not go into the sunset alone. That they retire our level best to save those jobs. Because the Constitutional Court of this country has confirmed that one of the fundamental principles of our labor law is job security. And when you're talking about these massive retention that we're facing, and you look at the numbers, they're very clear. And to the extent of contributing into that, this has become quite a critical function, especially for customer people. What we've done with the chair just to become part of the members of the House is that not only do we have commissioners who understand the principle related to large scale dismissals in particular, but we have developed specialist panels of commissioners who are specifically trained to deal with applications of large scale dismissals. Because it is our belief that if we have the type of commissioners who are sufficiently trained and with continuous upskilling to deal with these large-scale dismissals that we are seeing, it will be better for us, it will be better for the labor market. So we have engaged in all programs, including PAKISA program, because now the issue relating to retrenchment is getting out of hand, because amongst other things, who are the new entrants is the agriculture. The drought has caused the problem, and we have to make intervention. But we are hamstrung at the moment in terms of loading more commissioners to deal with this type of matter because of the change in our budget that we've enjoyed for the past 3 years. So, Madam Chair, our focus as far as the training, male schemes, the job security issues, we have very interesting programs and interventions that we are proud of that we've made. I know that sometimes we do correct where we've made some incorrect submissions in terms of the integrity of the data that we've done, but we've corrected that. But it does not detract from the fact when it comes to job security, it is a primary focus which we believe every partner and stakeholder that is involved in the labor market must participate in the program to ensure that where in cases where we can avoid losses of jobs in numbers, we must do so. So anyone that we are able to say, it will not be because we cannot have American skills to do so, it will be because it is unavoidable. So we have a very special thing, it is a special focus when it comes to job saving intervention. So we're going to do our best. As you can see, this function is going to the strategic objective one, which I've been discussing. Madam Chair, the last one I can just mention is the one that relates to the complaint issues and art acting, one of which is a perfect example, is the last presentation that we're doing today. But we do attend to those specific complaints. But what I must clarify, Madam Chair, because we've seen it in newspapers, that some of the things that are reported are not reported correctly. Some of the complaints we get, it's not necessarily about legal issues or conduct of commissioners outside or who acted outside what is expected, but it's about unhappiness on the outcome of the arbitration award. So that's why we promote conciliation law. But in all cases where complaints are about the conduct of the commissioner which is unbecoming, I can undertake to this House and say that we have acted, we are acting, and we continue to do so, because every commissioner who is entrusted with the office of the commissioner is expected to adhere to the code of conduct which is adopted by the government, that when you act and you perform your function, you must act as expected of the office of the commissioner. So, Madam Chair, these are the just a few issues I wish to highlight on this slide regarding the dashboard, which is just a broad view about the standing of our performance. So we have gone into the third course of the report. Reflect that, and we can give more detail to the extent as possible. Moving to the next slide, Madam Chair, it made the department to look at the details and the quantity of information, but I would deal with specific issues that are of great importance. In terms of the strategic objective one, is slide number 6, I have dealt with it already in part, the advanced and global security. We can confirm it and share that. Part of our strategy is exactly what I have presented, job security, and trying to do our best to save jobs for those who are facing retrenchment. And it is quite scary when you share, if you look at numbers, and so one company is prepared to retain 6,000 employees. That's a serious number of employees facing retrenchment. But we're doing our best. And then, in as far as the percentage of the 20%, why only 20%? We have submitted to us a full detail in writing on explaining why the 20%, as you said. It is a new target, as you said. But we hope that with the kind of efforts that we're putting, that when we revise our strategy from point, depending on the performance and results, for us to increase the percentage of passive as a product. Moving to the next step, the partnership issue. I want to pause just a moment in the chat to just confirm to you that if there's anything that we want to make sure it works, it's this one. Because this one suggests that health institutions of delivery of service, we cannot afford to work in silence. We cannot afford to do so. So we've made it a strategic imperative that we ensure all the best institutions and stakeholders that we work in partnership. So in terms of these strategic objectives and this key performance element, we have set a target of ensuring that at the very least we maintain, you know, 6 of those established strategic partners. The partnerships we're establishing, it is not just partnerships, it is partnerships that are mutually beneficial, that are also advancing and achieving what we want to see ourselves as in terms of our vision, also in terms of our mission. And the list of the partnerships that we've created in order to meet the target up to 2015, we can show you. One of the important partnerships that we've created is the sharing board. The sharing board. The sharing board, the board that gives you the share. Madam Chair, the legislature, when it amended the Labour Relations Act of 1995, one of the things it introduced was to give power to the system to be able to issue writs of execution. Let me explain, Madam Chair. Which effectively means the scenario of the reason, the mischief that the legislature was trying to correct was that when an employee gets an award, they come to the CCMA, they go to the case, they get an award. After an award, before his employer refuses to implement, then they must go to the labor court, get the labor court to stand, and then go to the chair. Because of the time it takes and the complications, because some of the parties, they do fear to go to court, even if it means just to get a stand. So when the legislature decided to amend the Section 143 of the Labor Relations Act, it was to ensure that that fear is taken away, and also to expedite the time it takes for an employee to enforce an award. I must hasten to mention, Madam Chair, that the enforcement of an award only occurs in cases where the employer refuses to implement the award. It is not automatic. But the problem that we found is that we have been challenged at the court, where an award or an order has been made which has set aside the awards that for the enforcement that we've done, where we have signed off the legal execution. And that, in fact, has meant that the purpose of the legislation amendment, which was supposed to be achieved, has been frustrated. So what we then did, we decided, Madam Chair, that in as much as most of the cases we cannot involve ourselves in appeals, but this one was where they fight. We then lost an appeal, not because we hold a particular view, but we understand what the purpose of the amendment was, so that we can enter the state as far as the interpretation of the provision is concerned. So I can confirm to you, Madam Chair, that that case is set down for the 12th of May, where a determination by the Labour Appeal Court will be made in as far as the proper interpretation of that issue is concerned. You will see, Madam Chair, in our later presentation on the Indian Regulatory matter, that it also suffered the same fate, that when an award was made of compensation, the employer was taken to challenge that their comments. But in as far as this issue is concerned, for us it is quite important, therefore, that the partnership we're creating with the sheriff is very important, because the sheriff are key in implementing legal aid. One of the old problems that we had was that the sheriff would refuse to implement an award unless an employee paid a certain amount of a deposit. So if somebody has been dismissed and do not have money to pay the sheriff's cost, therefore it means that award cannot be implemented. It's frustrating, the very reason why not money. So the legislature, when it did this, they tried to cure that issue. And having said that, for us to be able to achieve and ensure that our awards are respected, we do create that partnership relationship with the sheriff so that they can share with us their frustration. And we've had a number of engagements which produced in them actually acting on our instruction until that judgment was made. So all of us are waiting, Madam Chair, with one of our mutually beneficial partners called the sheriff. There is a number and a list of other partnerships we've created. So I can confirm, Madam Chair, in terms of that objective, in terms of that KPI, and in terms of the target itself, it is a very good target, and we are implementing it with implementation and intend to do so. Proceeding, Madam Chair, I will not say much on slide number 8. It's just the detail. One critical issue just in passing is that we are grateful to be in serious partnerships with the Department of Labor in many ways, Madam Chair, and one of those ways is enhancing our accessibility principle for the key performance, because not only do we use the CCMA offices, but for purpose of hearing matter, we're also using the offices of the Department of Labor, which is helping us in cases where we're not able to afford it in terms of our capital expenditure. So now what we've done, because the situations we've had, was that we have offices where you can only read information without actually entering information. So now we've progressed in the different paper other where we have in sight now in those offices that we're able to actually use through our case management system so that we can expedite service delivery. So that, Madam Chair, in terms of our strategic objective right now, EAP84, is to ensure that we enhance the accessibility and ensure that the accessibility drops. Proceeding, Madam Chair, I have nothing further to say with you today, as far as slide number 9 is concerned. I'll proceed to slide number 10. This, Madam Chair, is quite critical. If you look at the strikes the way they are, the way they happen, and Mr. Subira can tell you more about that because he's heading for exercise. One of the important things to do is the environment that is prevailing at the time of collective bargaining. In terms of the collective bargaining improvement process, we have certain innovations we've created that we can assist parties in the process before, during, and after the collective bargaining process in ensuring that some of the strikes that can take now can actually be shorter because of that time of intervention. We do understand that the timing of our intervention as an institution of dispute resolution is quite important because parties want to exercise their muscle. When the employer decides that for us, for the employer, he has to go to the streets, we cannot stop that. If the employer decides to lock up, we cannot stop that. But what we know we can do is that is to provide the tools and create an environment which is conducive and the tools for them to be able to engage in that collective bargaining process during, whether it's before, during, and after, which is existed in this case with the picket outside, for example. The environment that prevailed when we did not enter the beginning, but we came right back when the strike was at its peak. And then through those expertise of our senior commissioners that participated in the process, we started them to embed and also try to entrench those important principles without compromising the positions that the parties hold. So this is one of the most important tools in our view, which will ensure that the complaints that we have about violent strikes may be mitigated, probably eliminated, if we are that ambitious. If we do implement the innovations that we have in mind in ensuring that we engage at the right time and we assist parties in the collective bargaining process. Because the whole idea of that target, Madam Chair, is to promote an environment and improve the processes of collective bargaining. It is promoting it because it is a constitutionally protected right. So that we have to play our role as a dispute resolution and as a dispute prevention institution to ensure that we intervene. Moving into the next slide, Madam Chair, a twin sister to that process is what we call the workplace mediation module, which was already piloted in 2015. This, Madam Chair, is a very important innovation. In fact, through the pilot project, it has produced positive results that we as the Commission are proud of. What this is about, Madam Chair, is that using also other innovations which are contained, which is a lesson, like for example, the workplace conflict diagnosis tool, we devised methods and also innovations which will enable us in terms of strategic objective one, that we can intervene in the workplace before the existing issues as well. So when we have that mediation, it is a mediation not in the sitting house where parties are already in dispute, but we intervene in the workplace to ensure that we mediate successfully in the specific sector, in a specific workplace. This is the innovation that we piloted, and it looks to be working quite well. Madam Chair, I cannot explain to you the amount of excitement that was in the national office and office of the distributor when we received our first application from parties asking us to intervene. Because that means that it is understood on what we're trying to do something before the dispute becomes legal. It is quite satisfying. We are continuing to therefore to market this product. That our commissioners, within the budget that we have, that we are able to engage at workplace level and mediate disputes before they pass. This, in our view, is a very good strategic target, and we want to promote that and continue to do so with the intended. Moving, Madam Chair, to the slide 12. The building knowledge and skills. This is the externally based target as well. Madam Chair, one of the things that in South Africa, England, that we are lacking in sets or to a certain degree is the understanding that the Office of the Commissioner is supposed to be and it is a professional position. We want to reach a stage where any person in the society, when they are talking about the commissioner of the system, that that office must be respected. That it is our intention to ensure that the practice of labor relations in general, including us and our commissioner, that it is respected and recognized. So through this process, we want to ensure that we do that. In addition to that, Madam Chair, in order to extend what you are saying, that is why, amongst other reasons, we have this qualification, the labor dispute resolution practice program with the university. I can also confirm, Madam Chair, that universities are also one of the beneficial partners that we have in ensuring that we deliver the labor law or labor dispute resolution practice program to all of those lawyers. Madam Chair, this qualification is very important. It is not only intended to cover people who want to be commissioned. It is intended to any person who wishes to understand in detail how the workings of the informal labor. So this is a problem that I think we also submitted a very complete response to the question on why we say 75% compliance, why not 100% compliance in terms of the agreement of standards that we have with the universities who are delivering the program. We submitted invited the chair to this house, picking up from the previous submission that we've made on why we set it at 75%. There is no intention to state it above 75%. 75% amongst other reasons is a new problem. But so far it is producing graduates that are coming to CCM. And also this is assisting us in terms of cost as well, because it is very costly to train commissioners in-house. But it is not a completely outsourced function. But our intention is to have at least those applicants that want to be commissioners come with a theoretical base that is solid on the materials that are set by us, on the standards that are set by us, so that when they come and want to be commissioners, all that is left is just to do the mentorship program, the theoretical portion of it. I can also confirm, Mr. Chair, in the previous month, of all the graduates from that qualification from the different universities that we partner with, when they apply to the CCMA, all that they require to do is to apply for an exemption to do the theoretical thing that they used to do. So for those that have done this qualification, I can confirm that we have exempted from doing the theoretical training in-house because they've done the part. So that part is certain. And I know, Madam Chair, that we're going to be successful in this program. And the intention is not just to produce commissioners, it's also to produce world-class commissioners. And if an opportunity in the future presents itself, we will also introduce advanced programs beyond that qualification, so that when people talk about South Africa, especially because of the commission, that we don't just promote average commissioners, we produce commissioners who can compete anywhere. So that qualification, amongst other things, is intended to achieve. And so far, it is meeting those results. We can produce the difference in how many qualified, and how many have applied, and how many have been exempted in terms of that. Now, continuing, Madam Chair, to slide, the other slide, embedding the culture, give us our in-house issues. I don't know the board details on how we embed the structure and the strategy of the system in-house. That part is important, the specifics of it. But Madam Chair, if there's any further study to solve in terms of that, we will be happy to. The same principles apply in terms of the next slide, which is slide 40. Of critical importance, Madam Chair, just in passing, one of the things that we must address as the Commission is the optimal utilization of resources that we've got. And this is not only about physical resources that we have, it is also about IT resources, human resources. Any resource that we have must be optimally utilized. Our view, and my view, Madam Chair, is that while you have a worker in the workplace, a worker can never continue for the next stage. They have to grow. And that is our focus, grow. And when you're talking about staff, it's not just commission. We're talking about other staff other than commission. So it's a very important principle for us, so we can proceed with it and see the need. Madam Chair, let me proceed to slide number 15. In this slide, Madam Chair, it is about the build-up to what I explained earlier on. The issue relating to one of the things that we've identified is that we have to do a training that is aligned in as far as the needs of our organization is concerned. And one of the things that I've explained earlier on is that if we can produce enough commissioners that are trained properly to the extent that we want to train them, we can meet the current challenge of this huge wave of unemployment, the huge wave of job insecurity, the huge wave of the large scale business. That issue is a big issue for us. And we've taken a clear decision that at no stage will we stop to upskill our commissioners, to upskill our staff. And those that we take public upskilling, we have to use them optimally, not only for the organizational effectiveness, but also for the personal development of the person that we're talking about. For example, Madam Chair, we have a policy that we developed at the system that says if there's a vacancy that opens up at the system, what we do first, you must advertise that position internally, not you, internally. That also deals with the question of cost. You advertise it. If you have one applicant and that applicant meets the requirements, you appoint them. Why not you say, no, you're not sufficiently qualified, and then we'll get somebody extended? Why do you do that? What we're saying is that we will offer that opportunity. If it means, and of course, what we don't compromise on while we're doing that is ensuring that the principles, the content, the objects of transformation and performance equity apply in order to try to deal with the balance of the past. But at the same time, balancing the interests of those that are not identified in those groups identified in terms of performance. That is the issue of conformity and compliance. So in doing that, Madam Chair, it is a very good policy as far as you're concerned, because that policy says we must have homegrown material that can stand the test of time and be found. And Madam Chair, I went through the same process as well, through the lines of the organization, and I'm really a fan of it. So there's a lot of means in the organization that we must have so that we can be leaders. In the market, not just in the organization, not only just in the market, in the world, because we have to aim that high. Because when we start sharing these arguments about South Africa becoming a junk state, it means that we must have the skills, we must have the answer to meet this one. But we can only do so if in our small corner we optimize who we are and we optimize the resources that we've got. It is my experience as the director of decision, my resolve to ensure that we achieve that in terms of that strategy. So, Madam Chair, in as far as the ACP presentation is concerned, these are the only key areas I thought I should highlight to be put in house as far as our implementation, what we've done, what it means, and where we're headed. I don't know if, Madam Chair, I should proceed to budget this very complex before we start with the budget review, or shall I just proceed and finish? Must I proceed, Madam Chair? Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, Madam Chair, my CFO is sitting next to me, to the extent that he has been doing it, you know, that you've seen in his network that it happens, yeah. So,
don't be scared.
I'm being responsible. Madam Chair, there's a prelude to this that I must explain. And this is one thing that as a new director of the system I wish to pursue. We enjoyed a comfortable practice in the past 3 years when we were able to implement the employment law amendments as passed by Parliament. That's the point. We adjusted our environment, we adjusted our resources in accordance with that. At this stage, we have reached a point where we were happy and celebrating, and those that we have the until, of course, there was the large amount that we're not going to enjoy the budget anymore. Now we had to revise all the things that we're doing. And what pains us the most is when we start touching on sustainability. I will explain those specific portions in the that are affected by that, and the spirit and purpose of this revised budget. Madam Chair, the budget that we propose is the budget of 2016-2017, which is supported, and which supports our sense of motion for strategy, which is 2016-2019-2020. This strategy, Madam Chair, has called for a very realigned budget in order to ensure that in the areas of importance which are spoken about, I must pause and explain. Madam Chair, it is business as usual if you look at our case law that you find unfair dismissal up to 70 and 70 plus percent. But the decision that we've taken, concept as organization in terms of a strategic plan, is to promote first dispute prevention and dispute management. This effectively means that to the extent that we can prevent disputes, like we said earlier on, to the extent that those disputes that we cannot prevent, but we must be able to manage them. Our budget there, including the workplace mitigation and other interventions that I've mentioned, that our efforts that we are putting is to ensure that we achieve. We do experience a serious budget constraint, not that we are not managing our budget properly, because the budget we enjoyed has been taken away, which is now exposing us in terms of the structure of resistance we've created. But it does not impact us in terms of this budget, that what we do, whatever we do, we must not lose focus of our purpose. Our core business is dispute prevention, dispute management, and dispute resolution. But the order of how we do it is that we start with dispute resolution. Because when we start dispute resolution, it means the dispute already exists. We are engaging in a new field where we prevent dispute, where we can't prevent, we manage them. But this budget leadership, it is intended to ensure that it cushions that core business of the system. And therefore, when we did the budget allocation, it was done with that in mind. In terms of the labor law amendment, I have already submitted the chair in as far as the budget that we enjoyed. And we want to conscientize the House and also the Department here that we want to recall that that enjoyment we had of that budget because it is affecting services delivery. Our problems are not fully completed. We want to make sure that every commissioner of the CCMA, every commissioner of the CCMA has been taught and to the most expert level about the changes that have occurred in terms of employment. So that to us is an important issue that we wish to continue. And this also, Madam Chair, covers a very important aspect of the amendment called the administrative assistance to employees. This innovation is in terms of section 115 of the Labour Relations Act. What it says statutorily, this is not an option for citizens, this is what we must do. That we must provide administrative assistance to employees who are earning below the third threshold. And in doing that, Madam Chair, you allocate human resources, you allocate physical resources, you must maintain them, you must continue doing so. But the budget cut is taking a training in doing that service. We want to see that to the extent that we can see that we ensure that we don't lose the gains of the good that we've done so far. We've started very well, we've done excellently. But now we are hamstrung because of the budget change. We want to argue with the chair, we'll argue with you on this one, that we really need support to continue to do what the service delivery, to do what the worker that walks through the door enjoys. Any decision we make must not affect that. We must protect the chair. And that's what we intend to do moving forward. We won't stop arguing until such time that the service delivery to those that deserve it. Because that service manager includes very basic goods. When a worker walks in there, having been dismissed with no money, you can allocate an administrator who can help you to serve and file a referral and so that the whole process until such time that the date is filed that they have sufficient resources to do. But if you don't have the sufficient resources to do so, then it cuts short the extent to which you can go in providing a service. This is a statute of obligation. We cannot have compromise on whatever we do, we must make sure that we continue. Now, proceeding, Madam Chair, turning to the next page. There's no drama I can explain that. That's groundbreaking. It is based on the percentage of cases we get from the end of the gap. So that is just those kinds of things. How important is the next slide, which is page 18? This is a very important challenge in terms of the budget issue and the information. Number one, there's a textual issue by Treasurer that says state expenditure must be cut. We accept the truth. You must promote cost containment. We support the truth. No issue. The part that causes a lot of pain, Madam Chair, is the one that says that to the extent that you can, you must return. That's what the exception says from church. Now, every institution of this resolution, we don't want to be involved in this complicated discussion, but we are expected to consider the church. We've had a very substantive discussion with that. Why is it an option? We're not doing that. We have not done it. We have not done it. What we've done, Madam Chair, is to review how our costs are in as far as the positions that we have, those that exist. In particular, the new positions that we've created, but I can tell you, Madam Chair, even the positions that we've created, that we've tested, to find that it's not really important, we can do away with it. We've done away where we were able to match positions where we can, we've matched positions. That's what we've done. All of that we've done with an intention of ensuring that we cut the cost to the extent that we can. But the principle that must not be lost is the nature of the business of the system. The business of the system is when talking personnel, you're not just talking about employees here who are supporting certain machines that do the work. The implementation of the work of the system is through human beings called commissioners. And therefore, when you're talking about personal cuts, you can't cut commissioners. When you cut commissioners, then we'll have a ticket up strike, and we all know what the effect of that is. You know, the commissioners doing the work. Therefore, if we employ those resources as it is, if health concerns come to our attention, we must be able to engage as we did. When health concerns were returning 6,000 persons, we must employ and deploy that type of a human resource. So, when you're talking capital expenditure and cutting that, we are affected differently because it cuts the institution and resources of implementation. Because we need to beef up to meet the market demand. That's where we are at. So, Madam Chair, we have, as management, took a decision to freeze a number of positions in order to accommodate. Let me sound controversial, intentional, but for a good reason, right? When the employment law was implemented, Madam Chair, can I show you the results? When the employment law was introduced, one of the things that we had to look at is that let's look at our employment profile. Who do we have in our system? Number one, do we have labor brokers? If there are, shut them down. That's what I'm sure you can enjoy. There's a privilege of listening to people. So that you understand that this is not made up, it's part of the education of matter. Sorry? No, let me answer the question. Yeah, let me proceed. Okay. Now, Madam Chair, in that process of doing so, if you look at, so that you see we don't make this up, look at the last bullet. The other areas in terms of the budget cuts, right? Other areas include reduction of services from consulting. Well, that's the conscious decision. But there's an exception. There are certain types of services where it is unavoidable to use a consultant. But I'm not talking about consultants to the extent that they become permanent employees by court consultants. No. For example, we had, for example, what we call when we create a post or a function, we do what we call a gap analysis. We must evaluate the function that we're talking about. That in order for this function, for us to enjoy the service from this function, do we need a short-term service? What is the level of skill? What is it intended to achieve? Is it a language strategy? Is it a permanent function?
If the answer to the last statement that says it is a permanent function, then you must use a human being for and at the right time. But even when we job grading, because our HR was very rigid, like in 2015 and 2014, that even if we job grading, for example, even if we create talent and succession, a policy that is driven by employment equity, if I can get a consultant, then if I don't have the resources in China, I can get a consultant 6 months, 7 months. When you're done with the job, then you have paid. You've served your function. But this is what we've done. When we interpreted the color A, we noted that we have interpreters that we have who were, you can call them consultants. They were there as independent contractors doing the function and go. Then we said, well, speaking, let's look at the function that we're talking about. We're talking about interpreters. Interpreters provide consensus to the commissioner for those who need interpretation services. Then we took a decision. This is not a consultant's position. This is not a fixed function. It's a permanent function.
Yes.
And we did that, we employed. I think they called it about 140 that we employed. 140. Madam Chair, that what I meant earlier on when I said it made uncontroversial is because we spoke about budget cost and managing cost. So a question might arise. So why are you employing 140 guys in carrying costs? That's irrational. That's irrational. But what do we know with that decision? We have not employed a service that is useless. We have not employed a service that is temporary. We have employed a service that is key to the function of the commission and to give proper service to, actually, the applicant who appears before the commission.
Yeah.
So that decision was taken with a clear conscience.
Okay.
The next one, Madam Chair, is about cleaners. We have consultants giving cleaning services to the commission. We no longer have them. All of them are employees of the commission.
Good. Okay.
That is a clear decision we've taken, and we've done it. It's working very well for us. And also achieving the intended purpose of justification. So, Madam Chair, there are a couple of examples of the type of consultants. We've only left with only two, which is Deloitte and Fusion and now, who are completed the functional job rating and developing the policy. We have no other consultants that are facing, as far as consultants is concerned. Madam Chair, on the recruitment cost, just briefly, we've noted that putting an advert in a newspaper is a very expensive effort. While it reaches the leadership quite nicely, but we've explored alternative means, such as using our website, using our social media to advertise positions, to ensure that we don't incur any cost. I've already explained about the policy that we've created as far as internal training are concerned, and that policy is being implemented. This part is not rather to say about the interest issues that we share, but what's important is the next slide on page 21. Or slightly different. And that is also in as far as other revenues, because in terms of the aircraft, like when you do your what is called an inquiry by an arbitrator in terms of question 188, you charge fees for that, but it's not intended to create any profit or anything, but it's just purely a cost and cover issues. I know that there's a thinking around that issue moving forward. Madam Chair, getting into the numbers, the slide is quite easy to go through. Our approved budget is spending at 783 million, and which is a 8% increase from the previous budget of 2014-2016. That part covered. So the problem, as you see, the whole administration, you see, is 162, institutional development, all of those programs and its contents are explained to the public. On what constitutes part of those problems that we have. And then the next slide, Madam Chair, is about the overview of the budget in case of the medium term state of the budget. The figure of the budget that you will show you the question that we can talk about. That is as far as this budget, Madam Chair, is intended to achieve all the things that we've mentioned, but I think I've made it very clear that what has been sliced up, we must be sliced back, so that we can achieve our mandate, so that we can keep doing what we said very happy. Because that's what we can do. The last presentation that I'm sharing after the budget has to do with which is going to be quite good. In your reporter, Madam Chair, so that you understand which Ms. Nduna, who is here, that we brought as part of the delegation, is not the legal suspect that comes. He comes because this case arose in which he's the head of the he's part of the delegation to assist us because he's got the personal knowledge of what is happening as far as the police is concerned. So
because it's quite important that I explain. Madam Chair, keeping school will go to bed, which is quite important. This has to do with a case that involves parliament. When the parliamentarians of this committee visited this engagement happened and interviews that were made with the members of parliament. And then after the members of parliament left, then there is, because of that interview, they participated in the witnesses. And this led to the matter being spread to us. They were dismissed on the 24th of September, and the employees lost that case with the CCMA in Mpumalanga on the 28th of September, 2015, rather than 48 out of 26. Now, Madam Chair, when you did the opening, Madam Chair, you said one of the key principles of us presenting, we must be honest. We will admit to the shortcomings that we have experienced in this regard as part of that honesty principle that we want to also echoes. Madam Chair, what has happened, which was unusual, is that what happened was that the commissioner, when the matter was set up, gave a call to the other party, the employer was not. And it is not a rule in terms of the CCMA rule that you must phone the party that is not there. If you are satisfied as the commissioner that all processes have been followed, you proceed with the matter. But the problem with that practice is that sometimes mistakes happen, that when you think that the notice has been received by the other party, that it has not. And in order to avoid these default awards, because the problem with the default awards in the church is that the party was not there, may have a good reason why they were not, and then as a result of that, they can apply for a decision of that award, and the matter is back to square one. So if you look at the process of the resolution of the dispute, it takes longer than anticipated because of that process. In this case, Madam Chair, despite the fact that the phone call was made and the employer indicated that I do not know about the case, I did not get the notice, the commissioner proceeded with that. Now, when we received the complaint, Madam Chair, in this issue, we evaluated the entire process, including the awards and our system that we have in place, which we call the perusal system. Not only whether the matter was properly handled in terms of administration, on whether the conduct of the commissioner in dealing with the matter is in line with the code of conduct and also the deed and dispense and discharge their function in, as the office of the commissioner. We found that we found the wanting in the past. Now, Madam Chair, even the award, there were quite serious material errors that were there, and also the commissioners that were involved in perusing the award were also at fault. To this extent, Madam Chair, we admit that there was an error. We acknowledge it because we saw what the error was. Let me explain what this perusal system means. This perusal system means when a commissioner has issued an award, before that award is authenticated, we will send it to a commissioner who has not dealt with the matter to just not only to change anything, to check if the facts and everything that's set out in terms of the format of the award is correct. Number two, that there is a rationality between the facts or the evidence that is there and the analysis of the outcome. In addition to that, in resolving that matter, that the law that is applied is correct. This is the structure that constitutes an award system. We've established this kind of system throughout the country for each and every award that is made. So we then discovered, Madam Chair, that the commissioner, when the perusal, when we looked at the award, all of those things were highlighted and issues that arose. That process of perusal, Madam Chair, is not only important to the party, it is also important for the commissioner, because the commissioner must grow and learn from the mistake. Unless it is gross misconduct, unless it involves dishonesty, then you have a different approach and a different principle applied. So we discovered them in the perusal system because we allocated the senior commissioner to look at it. And in looking at that, highlighted all the problems that were there. And then the commissioner admitted, therefore, that there was an error. And then by law, which is allowed in terms of RFA, a decision of that award was effective. That award was received. So I'm not talking to the different award, what it was, what it provided, but because it is of no consequence for this one. But important also is what follows in the next page. The matter after the award was received that was cancelled using ordinary language. Then the matter was set down again, and then a party was tendered. What is key, Madam Chair, is on that third point. This is very important to explain. because in terms of Section 1 of the Bill of the Labour Relations Act, when parties come before the Commission, amongst the things they're expected to submit is what remedy they seek. They can seek reinstatement, they can seek refund, they can seek compensation. And the Commissioner, especially when you have unsophisticated parties before you, you have a duty to explain those remedies to those that are here. That's social time. So that when they exercise the decision on which remedy they want to exercise, they must be properly informed of the decision they make. They are not legal technocrats, most of them. If a domestic worker comes and says, what is compensation? You must explain what it means in lay terms. That means if you take compensation, this is what it means. It means that taking your salary, and because of misconduct, the commissioner can only grant up to 12 months, multiply that by that number of months that he would have decided on some grounds, whether 6 months, 5 months, 10 months, then you get that money called compensation. Once you receive compensation, it's going to be in the form of an award. And once you get that, you cannot go back to work. Because if you miss explaining that, and it gets compensation, and it goes to the employer and says, I'm back, you paid me, so I'm here to work, then that's wrong. Because in terms of the law, that's what nobody is. So you must explain everything that is available to us. That if you're talking about reinstatement and reemployment, this is the difference. So in this case, membership, the employees came and said, we are seeking compensation, you don't want to go back. That's the information that's there. And then eventually then the commissioner then awarded a compensation to the employees. And the figure is right at the bottom of the last and in the last black bullet, which is 2,600 multiplied by 10 months, which is 26,000 per employee, which was due to be paid before the 31st of December 2015, which is a change from the initial one which was done by the previous commission. I can confirm with myself that the commissioner who did this award, the second one, is not the same commissioner who did the first one. You will see also, Madam Chair, that even if you go and review, when an award of the commission is being reviewed, when the judge sets that award aside, when he sends it back to the decision maker, it specifically orders that the matter must be done by the commission. We use the same principle in order to resolve that issue. Now, Chair, what is also now of pain, which is an issue, you will also note, Madam Chair, that when the legislature, this parliament, changed the Labour Relations Act, one of the ills we try to deal with is unnecessary review. Because the review says that I'm not willing to accept whatever that award is saying, and I'm going to challenge the decision. When they send it to the Labour Court, they leave it there for years, and it's just that, you know, nothing happens. Now we know that they are tied to timelines and certain things that are expected to be done by parties at the Labour Court level to make sure that an award does not sit there. What's important is that when an award is challenged through a review, it is not automatically made unenforceable. It continues to be enforceable. You can continue to enforce it, unless there's a court order that says that you can't implement it. So this is the same big scenario in this case, Madam Chair, is that I've been informed, I've not seen the paper, that there's a review application which was submitted by the fund challenging that award. In the process, Madam Chair, we have, as it is our duty in terms of the amendment now, in terms of other things, to assist the employee to ensure that the writ of execution is issued and implemented. This also fell in as a victim of that challenge we have in the court, that we can't issue a writ of execution. But we have assisted to the extent that the sheriff, who is responsible in Barberton, that's where the matter has been submitted. I must acknowledge and also with appreciation, Madam Chair, that we do have a fund that we receive from the Department of Labor that is intended purely for that, to ensure that those employees who are executing awards who cannot afford, specifically must cover the cost for those individuals. We are implementing that so that we ensure that when we issue a writ of execution, that it is fully implemented. To answer the Commission, an award means nothing until such time it is implemented as an award accepted by the Commission. So this process of review and this challenge that we are having at the moment is frustrating that process. But we have advised the employees that until such time that the award is set aside, until such time that there's an order that says you can't implement it, we proceed the review. So that's what the law says. Now, Madam Chair, it is unfortunate that in terms of our jurisdiction as the CMA, we cannot get involved in the review application, only to accept to the extent that we must provide records and the like. Unless there was a key important legal principle of national importance that is a threat, we enter the state only to that extent, because we don't get embroiled in the issues between employees and employers, except to the extent of government. Now, Madam Chair, in our acknowledgement, in the manner in which our commissioner dealt with that matter, we did acknowledge that it did not, in fact, pursue what the LRA talks about called the social justice. But we hope that the corrective measures that have been put in place in the process of the market, in correcting that problem, and the commissioners have learned from the process that it was a good thing. So what we've done also is with very interesting innovations, that we've also improved our recording system to ensure that to the extent that we can capture, you know, bad conduct and commissioners and all of those who did that, we should be able to see that and be able to act in terms of those commissioners. The other system that we've put in place, which is the criminal system, we've improved it, but we are unable to roll it out fully because of budget constraints. But if we can, it will really make a huge difference in terms of the quality of awards that we issue. We want to reach a stage where when we issue an award, those who receive it must not think that it is automatically due. They must respect it, they must honor it, and they must apply. So that's the idea that we intend to get. Madam Chair, this concludes our presentation on all the issues that you called us to present. And we will then put the questions that I have for. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. We welcome you again and the opportunity of the new director, the appearing in some portion of the second in the director. Members, there was a very detailed report from the Senate.
Can I be noted?
Majority of your commissioners are not employees.
maybe you can explain why they're not employees, why don't you pay them as employees? The receiver revenue says that if you earn 75% of your income from one source, you're actually deemed to be an employee. But my understanding is, I think it's something like 70% of your commissioners are independent contractors. Maybe you can assure us that they can become employees quite soon. The other thing is the buildings. There was a big issue about buildings and the contract that you had in Cape Town and the expenditure used on some of the litigation. Maybe you can report that, that no more expenditure needed and you've got a new building and you moved and all that sort of thing. Let's hear about it. One thing I do want to say, and is that I think many of us have been on record praising the CCMA, and that we believe that it is the jewel in the crown of the Department of Labour. And you should be boasting about the international recognition that the CCMA gets. I know that whenever I get visiting labour lawyers from abroad, I take them to the CCMA here in Cape Town to show them around and to boast. And maybe you should be boasting to us about that. Just in terms of another comment and another, maybe you can mention something to us, but I see you've had almost 140,000 cases referred in 9 months, and yet you still kept the turnaround time at about 90 days from date of referral to the date of the arbitration award. Now that is superb by any stretch of the imagination, and maybe you could intervene at the Department of Justice and help them there, because I think the turnaround time of a much lower caseload is about 3 years. And we heard earlier on that there's a criminal case that's being investigated by police that's taken already 3 years. And maybe you could help us there on that. But the other thing is, in terms of the intervention in destructive strikes, and I commend you for that, and that they are moving into that. We've obviously not had those destructive strikes that we had 2 years ago in this country on the platinum belt and in agriculture, if you recall. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about some of the planning for a destructive strike like that, of that nature, which would be interesting. Maybe you could also comment on, and I've heard it through the grapevine, but I don't know much about it, but your training of commissioners has become a university course. Which is a first in the world, from what I understand, and I'd like to commend you on that, and maybe you can tell us a bit about that. You spoke about sheriffs. I don't think it's common knowledge yet that there is a fund that could possibly help impecunious employees, helping with the sheriff's costs, because I know I get hundreds of queries of people who have got awards and can't afford the sheriff. Maybe the CCMA ought to be able to tell people that there is that. Is that, and I think it's a great innovation that he should be telling the people who have got the awards. I know that private attorneys won't be advising them to do that, and so it might be something worthwhile. One thing I do want to comment on, Director, is the advisors that you have to the public. You've got a superb system where the public arrive, they're not sure whether they do have an unfair dismissal case or not, and they go to your offices, and everyone knows where your offices are. They go there, and then they actually direct you to get some advice. And there's someone giving advice. Now, we had discussions a few weeks back, or a week back, with the UIF, where they don't have a system like that, and maybe you could be helping your brothers and sisters in the UIF with that. Another innovation which the CCMA has implemented, and I don't know what the cost is of this, but I'm sure it's saving you money and maybe some comments on it, is that many of the conciliations are now done by the telephone, which is fantastic and cheap and good for both parties, that an individual doesn't have to come in who's been dismissed, can't afford the bus fare to get there and whatever, and yet most people have got telephones today and they're doing that, and it also helps businesses. There must be a cost saving there, an enormous cost saving. There is another idea that possibly can be a cost saving, is some sort of gatekeeping that can happen. I know legally you can't stop people referring a case for an unfair dismissal, but maybe some sort of gatekeeping can be practiced, where you can tell people actually you don't have a case. We've got a employer told us that there's a camera, would you catch it? Put you on the camera, taking all the petty cash out, and you wave at the camera, and it's you, and it isn't really a case. Maybe there is some way in which you can exercise some sort of weight, even it might be another expensive program. I think there is going to be a lot more cases in this coming year. And I'll tell you why, maybe not because of the blood bars that the employers are suffering. Employers are suffering, they're not getting the orders, they're not getting the manufacturing, and they are going through retrenchment. That's not the biggest one. I think there's going to be, with some of the amendments that are coming through, it's filtering through, but cases such as equal work for equal pay, that the trade unions haven't gone out yet and properly explored that, properly referred cases. And I can imagine there'll be thousands of them. And we're going to see a lot of that. And then finally, and I've got a lot more other comments, but I don't want to take the whole afternoon, but finally I'd like to congratulate you on Commissioner Colton Johnson here in Cape Town, who has been fantastic in the sense that he is the most approachable person that anyone's ever come across. So thank you very much for that.
I can see you are still energetic. We want to take the greater part in your presentation so that we can have fewer questions. I'm on slide 19. Your last bullet there is saying other areas include reduction in services from consultants. Which are the services that you are outsourcing, so that we can be in a position to see whether you've got it so bad or not? Then again, you intend to extend your licensing of the case management system to subject countries. With the meek resources that we have, are you going to be able to afford that? In your introduction, somewhere when you were to introduce the budget, you acknowledged that when you cut costs, you were adhering to the call by Treasury. But in your tail end, you are appealing that your pocket should be increased. You are contradicting yourself, you know you cut the money. So you can't go to the one whose money is also cut and request that you be given a bigger pocket. The advice I can give you is to say the fund you have utilize it well so that you don't end up having financial constraints. So in your case, we have a direct interest because in one way or another, it affects us. So we will appreciate it that every time you pick up that service development, that we upgrade as a committee. Because there's no way that after our visit, it is a right for the committee to visit. There's no way that can lead to people losing their jobs. Instead, it's supposed to come with changes in their conditions of employment. Thank you.
Hello, Victoria.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, one, there is a program that takes the same A. Yeah, has been running annually. I think I used to take advantage of it when I was in Salga. I think that program is commendable. I believe they still continue with it. I see the innovation is building on it. The one of running workshops for labor and dispute management. I think that is a good program. But the question that I want to ask as well, because part of what we picked up from the last presentation we got, I think it was the department, was that there is still a large number of commissioners that are not accredited on the new amendments, that are still having gaps in terms of the training on the Labor Relations Amendment. So I just want to check if there's any plan for that, for a development plan on the new Labor Relations Act, in terms of the plan. Also check what would be the training intervention plan, because if you've got number of commissioners that are not accredited to train, then it means it becomes a futile exercise for government to introduce labor relations amendments if there is that gap. I just want if we can just get a feedback on the level of training for the commissioners on the on that one. I think that Mr. Pagli has asked a question regarding the Cape Town freshmen, the buildings. But my insight is that that actually part of the litigation process has led to people losing their jobs. And I just want to get clarity. Is there a link between the freshmen irregularities for that building with the sudden departure of the former director, Ms. Narin? See, if I can just get an indication that on page level, I see that part of the objective there is to achieve 100% transformation as per those four quarters. I had the privilege of working for the CETA for the past 9 years. And I said that part of the experience is that all these companies have had employment equity plans, and the inspectors have battled to ensure that there's proper implementation of employment equity to ensure 100% transformation of the workplace. If I can just get an indication there, because in my view, I think with the current untransformed workplaces, that remains a serious ambition. Maybe the new director has got a better plan compared to what we have had previously. I'm also interested with the, because with the courses of CCMA being offered by universities, if perhaps you can get an indication if, well, I understand it's not all universities that will be offering the course. If you can just get an indication of universities that perhaps you have the MOU with that will be offering those, and just to check, you see, as you advise and direct people to do the course of CCMA, if you can just get that an understanding there, and of course the significance and implications in terms of the absorption of those people to commission to CCMA. Does it mean that those people will be exempted from which part of assessment of CCMA for those people to find themselves? Well, I understand CCMA employs people annually. The last part is basically what has been asked, because my understanding is that CCMA has got part-time and full-time commissioners, as it has been said, that which those part-time, I believe, they fall under the category of independent contractors, whether their intention to match them and have one category of employment of commissioners. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Ali, for the presentation and the enthusiastic nature in which you embrace the cost-cutting measures that you're implementing within the organization. I think it is rather infectious today. My question, I have for two, relates to slide 11. KPA number two, we state that workplace mediation model piloted and in a particular identified sector. So I'd like to know when this sector you're planning to roll it out, and when within the year you envisage it to be done. And then just below that, we also have a labour market conflict with a prediction tool prototype developed. I'm quite interested in what kind of prototype or tool differently that would be is a type of diagnostic tool where you have I'm sort of enthusiastic about it, you know, as to what it can do and how it can predict where potential conflict might arise. And then we just below that we have a workplace diagnostic tool. And I know it is more sort of localized, and it is marginally differ or substantially differ from the labour market. That's a little bit more information as to what is in the list with regard to that, so that we have a better understanding. And then on slide 12, Madam Chair,
said, KPA number 2, the second number of initiatives, reports. When are we going to, how many, and when is it going to be done, and perhaps what kind of research reports are sort of envisaged with regard to that particular outcome? And then slide 13, second last question, is the embedded citizenship in the CCMA community. We speak about social responsibility campaign to be conducted. It's percentage progression that is indicated. If this is at all possible, is that how, what's the quantum, how many perhaps, it could be 10 for the year and 20% would be 2 in the first quarter, etc. If it's at all possible. And then lastly, let's take you back to slide 9, where it's stated there, percentage of labour market monitoring and response analysis reporting mechanisms implemented. Now, my question is whether it ties in with the Sierra Bambele strategy of the CCMA, and how does it link up with the drug savings unit? Is there any relationship between the two? And finally, how do we measure the impact of the drug savings units? Are they being deployed in all provinces, or is it a national sort of centralized structure? And that's it, thank you.
Thanks, Joe. I think you're all tired, so I'll be very quick. Just in terms of your key performance area of managing conflict in the workplace, by the way, welcome to your new position. Thank you, boss. We do know you. The question I have in my mind is about policy that affects conflict in the workplace. And I just want to ask, have you ever been called to neglect when they're deliberating matters such as this, to give your opinions as CCMA people who are in the field, the cut and thrust? You deal with it when it goes wrong. By the time you find out about it, people are fighting, there's drama. Have they ever called you to neglect to say, oh, come give us advice, what have you seen on the ground, what makes these work conflicts work? If you could just tell us if you've ever been there, or if you have not, should we encourage them to make an opportunity for something to you as well? Because you're not a member of NEDLAC, but you are a stakeholder in the environment, which I think is quite important, and I think you've got good advice to give. Just in terms of your rental agreement, we heard obviously about the big one that was nearly, we've already asked you questions about it. I'm not going to go through that again. All that I'm asking is, are you sure, and who have you appointed in your organization to check that we don't get, that one was actually stopped before the money was paid, but that we don't get it happening again in the future? Because there are some people who love doing business with the state. You know, we had that police heat on the Durban, depending that went a lot of things wrong. Have you got someone in place and good policies in place that are being monitored so that we don't get another big accident? The previous commissioner didn't even ask. And then your budget, you say, is quite low, but if I look at it, 2014-15, the actual was 631, the revised for 2015-16 is 733, and the 2016-17 is 797 million. It's going up. I wouldn't see anything if I were you. There's some departments where it's going down because they don't have money. So I would be happy with the budget if I were you. You might have to cut corners down there,
why they not. If that is interpreted to the labor, yes, that's all. And that's the only problem. In as far as the question is on the update and the case study, cost update, sorry, is it correct that the majority of the commissioners are not employed? Well, yes, that's correct. But remember, the CCMA, when it comes to employment of commissioners, the governing body has power to appoint either full-time or part-time or for second shift. That's the power in terms of the Act. It is not the decision of the system. It is the Act that says this are the commission. And also, when you advertise, you only see that our adverts have both sides, full-time commissioners and six-time contract. And you'll see also, if you look at the six-time component, it is those commissioners that do not wish them. They don't want them. Because they are attorneys, they are practicing advocates, they are consultants, they do all other sorts of businesses that they do. So they do not want to be tied into a salary and just doing service for the employee, subject to the instructions of the director and all of that. It's a question of choice. So that is the demarcation that is created by the Act. All we do is comply, and that's what we do. So that's how we get to that. On the update on Cape Town building, and do we have a new building? Do we have a new building? No. Let me explain for the demarcation portion. What has transpired, I think we presented in the past, is that the building that we're fighting about was sold. So then our fight moving forward became academic. On what are we fighting about? The building. We cannot force us to go back and be in the building because it's not there anymore. But in order to make sure that the decisions we do are correct, we then said, while we may have our preliminary views about that, on that scenario. So what do? We continue the verification, to withdraw the application, or to enforce that? The enforcement part for you is not right. We then approach a very senior counsel to give us an opinion on this and whether we wait to continue legally speaking to fight the case. We were then advised that it is not. We must not pursue fighting the application to review that award because in any event, the substratum of that fight is gone. We then instructed that we must withdraw that application. We took it to the board of the system. The board of the system took a decision. That yes, we can use based on that impact. That's what this is about. On the question number five, on the 140,000 cases yet to date, and yet we still have a short case turnaround time, could you help the department? Well, with the Department of Justice, I don't know. But what we know is that we are producing, as you said, I think there was a proper comment that said, we are producing commissioners every year. The budget I'm talking about, remember we had a special budget allocation relating to the amendment. That's where maybe I should explain when talking about budget contracted council. When we got additional funding for the 3 years in anticipation of all the new pieces of legislation, in order for us to ensure that our commissioners are ready for institution, that they have to be ready for us, we were allocated that budget. We adjusted our resources according to one of the things was to make sure that each and every commissioner, another question as well, that each and every commissioner of the system is taught to the T about the human amendment. Employment Act, the basic conditions, Employment Services Act, all of that. And then we took a clear policy decision that in order to make sure that those that sit in jail are up to date with the cases, we made it a prerequisite that you will not sit in a case when you have not been taught in terms of the new amendment. And what we did in order to mitigate the cost on the part-time commissioner is that when they attend training, we pay them a fee for attending, because they're part-time commissioners, and to ensure that they are taught. But that was the whole budget that was meant for, to make sure that all of the commissioners are taught properly. So for those that are not participating, they cannot sit in those cases. So that's where the accreditation question comes in. You are accredited to deal with cases that deal with the new amendment, provided you've been trained by us in terms of the funds allocated and you're accredited as such. That's how that requirement happens. And the result of the quality and the number of commissioners we have, that's why we're able to meet our turnaround time in terms of the case. And we monitor the time in terms of the contract, in terms of processes, you know, the standard operating procedures, you know, in each and every thing, each and every office, and make it very clear and monitor that you've got a case on this date and the conclusion is supposed to end within 30 days, you're out of time, please explain. We implement that. Yeah. So that's how we managed to meet our timeline. So we are proud of that and we'll continue to do so. In respect of the first approach, do you have a preemptive plan? And if yes, what are the, I think it has some sort of confusion.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's very difficult when it comes to predicting what a destructive strike is going to be. I think nobody, you know, including a lot of self-professed experts and accepted experts, predicted that we're going to have a five-month strike in Vietnam. It just didn't make sense. But from the CCMA's perspective, we have, as my director has mentioned earlier, interventions and tools that we use before, during, and after. One of the things we developed a few years ago was a labor market monitoring tool. It was a very rudimentary tool. And as part of our annual performance plan this year, Chair, is to actually build on that. It's essentially an intelligence gathering mechanism that basically allows us to scan the labor market, gathering intelligence from various sources, including the press, including physical interaction with people, that helps us to just get an idea of what's going down. Okay. What then happens is we don't see ourselves as strike busters, because in terms of 150, we are there to intervene when it comes to true strike action. Okay. But we found that the timing of intervention is absolutely critical. Because if one were to intervene before the strike, at that stage, nobody knows what's going to happen. The likelihood of either party acceding or consenting to the CCMA's intervention is low. And over the years, we've actually learned that, you know, the magic number is somewhere in the first week, depending on how severe the strike is. That if you intervene too early after the strike has started, chances are the trade union is going to turn down your offer. And if you intervene too late, offer your intervention too late, especially if the strike has not been effective, then the employer is going to not want to consent to the offer. Talking about what we do, we would then put our best resources into the front line. And in terms of, we have an A list of commissioners that are very experienced, very well capacitated, understand the sector, understand the different processes. And I mean, we've been involved in processes. For example, everybody here in Cape Town will remember the last time the private security had a strike was in 2006. I don't know why they didn't have a strike since then. CCMA worked with them since 2006. And we've given this country 15 years of labor peace in that sector. You know, it's a little known fact, because the press doesn't like to report on good news. They like to report on bad news. Actually, I'm going to just share with you, when in the first year, in 2006, in 2009, when we signed the first agreement in private security, and we called a press conference, nobody cared. There was only one journalist that came in and reported on it. But at the time when the strike was going on, we had something like 200 journalists hovering around like vultures at our head office while we were mediating. So, and then after the strike, and this is what led to the conceptualization of what we call the collective bargaining improvement process. I'd like to put my head on the block to say that is the one single intervention developed by the CCMA that has half a chance of turning the labor market around. We cannot get this right with regulation. We can't regulate conduct like we're trying to do. We can keep on making laws, but there's a famous saying that says you can make it illegal, but you can't make it unpopular. You know, so what the collective bargaining improvement process does is, after a settlement has been reached, whether there's been a strike or there's been no strike, we actually sit and in a very structured way analyze and conduct a post-mortem of the negotiation process to help parties pick up what did we do right, what did we do wrong, what helped us and what hindered us from reaching settlements. We did a very successful process like that in the pulp and paper sector, and came out with a 10-point plan that the CCMA is now helping them to actually implement. So we want to do more and more of that as time goes by. The other thing you'd notice on that the slide was we talking about negotiation training. Now, you know, I think the realization within the CCMA, and I'm almost finished here, sorry, the realization within the CCMA is at the macro level that we can't carry on doing business like we do. We're dealing with 170,000 cases. We expect that caseload to run up to 180,000 this year, okay? We've had a situation that whenever we've opened an office, it just develops its own caseload. So if we carry on doing dispute resolution, which we're very good at, you know, it just leads us to an unsustainable situation. We can't come to this committee 10 years from now with some other people sitting here tell this committee that the CCMA deals with 300,000 cases, we need more money. And this is where the new strategy refocuses it. And in the microcosm of collective bargaining, the same realization hit us. And this is why we put all of these interventions in terms of dispute prevention and dispute management in terms of collective bargaining. Because when we get to dispute resolution, that's the last part of the equation. We need to be playing in that game and be able to report more success stories like the private security sector to this committee in the years to come. And I'm confident that we will. Thank you, Chair.
Just to add on the check time process is that we have gone out on that bid process with regards to getting the building there, and that process is still in place. Ongoing.
Okay, thank you. I think another question that is that we have put in place new innovations over and above the normal process of controlling the business concerns in order to make sure that relevant. Amongst the things that we did is to ask our internal audit before we award to check if all is well. That's the first thing that we do. Another future innovation, which is part of the internal audit research we spoke about, is to check with the institute whether it is possible to introduce internal audit as part of the internal audit to make sure that, because if you look at the function of internal audit, it's not to the same detail as you would find in the foreign. So if it is payment of the credit is accepted, we are going to introduce that element to make sure that, you know, part of the supply chain process is controlled. In addition to that, what we've done, because in terms of the procurement systems that we've got the procurement committee, bid specification, evaluation, and adjudication. And then from there, it's an award. What we've done for all transactions above 1 million rand, and mainly it is the leasing, we've added an additional committee called the procurement committee. That oversees all of those processes that there is compliance. It's an extra measure that we have to ensure that to make sure that it is done properly. The key issue in that is not just persons you appoint them. The CFO sits there, and the director sits in the committee, and members of the board sit there, supply chain experts sit in that. So at the time we make a decision, we must be convinced, and of course, at that time, the internal audit process is complete. It constitutes part of that report. So that is the extra measure we put in, just to make sure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past. So that's what that issue is.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe the last part to add in terms of the lessons learned is that since that incident time, which was the financial year ending 2013, we have not had any finding with regard to the lease from the AG, which is from that financial year that is up till now, which was our audited results for the year ending 2015. So that's one of the things that we need to look in terms of where we are implementing the corrective measure.
But to the extent that we find them, we deal with it. Because we cannot put all the effort and time to perfect this and people find a way to do it wrong. So, but we show and we're very clear about that part. And we communicate that message very well. That we want to run a very ethical organization. In the question relating to the university program, to break the comment, yes, this is in partnership with universities. In fact, the question was asked in which universities? Stellenbosch, Nelson Mandela, UCT, University of Free State, and KZN, which is actually engaged in negotiations. Those are the universities that are involved. Once a person has qualified in terms of that qualification, they then come, you still have to make an application if you want to be commissioned. It's not automatic. And when you apply to the commission, we do exempt persons who have done the qualification. They don't have to repeat the field. But what is left is just a mentorship. The mentorship is what the university cannot teach you, how to become a commissioner. You get the theoretical basic knowledge about the theory of the law, but the true test of the law is in its application. So in order to deal with application and other administrative aspects on the life of a commission, we allocate a mentor who is a seasoned commissioner to mentor that new entrant through processes. You observe when they do processes, then he observes you doing certain processes. He drafts a report to us saying this person is competent to become commissioner once he's met all of those standards. So it is quite a complete program. Not automatic process. If you don't apply, then you can't be commissioner. You have to apply. Even when you apply, you have to indicate, I want to be part-time commissioner, I want to be full-time commissioner. There will be level A, level B, or a senior commissioner. Then you are categorized in terms of your experience, skill, and the level of education. You do have all sorts of people that apply, even though they shouldn't be applying, but they do apply. But if you do, you can't stop people from applying. And then we make a decision on who becomes commissioner. Because we become very jealous. As the new director, this is I'm very clear about. I'm a living example. I know what it means. I preach what I do. When I say that as a commissioner, you must continue to upskill, you must ensure that you become the best in the business. That's what he expects. That's what he must implement. So it is not easy that you will have, you have people of very good academics who give you 98% pass in the qualification. But when it comes to the price qualification being commissioned, get exactly the opposite. So we have to put systems and controls in place to ensure that what we get is the best that is available. So that when you want to become a commissioner, you don't have to be commissioner because you, it is the second best, or because you failed elsewhere, you think in the meantime you can be a commissioner. That's not what you want. You must make a decision consciously. I want to be a commissioner of the CTMA. I want to be the best commissioner. I'm properly qualified. I will execute my function as a commissioner of the CTMA. If you have that mentality, the experience, the expertise, and the qualification, you will be a commissioner of the CTMA. Once we've entered into practice, we've decided what level must be as well. B, A, or senior commission. So we do those kinds of classification. In terms of the other programs, they continue. Those which are non-commissioned in terms of the programs. The other question, Madam Chair, was citizens do not know how the service to assist with the enforcement of law. Should the system not be more towards them? Madam Chair, the answer is yes. Because in the money that was allocated to us with the COVID special funds for the amendment, what we did in that process, as we were educating the members of the party, of the party, it became what we call our outreach program. Because we've got commissioners that go all over the shop that were teaching about amendments in general. We did not have specific programs that were specific about this particular issue. But because of its importance, and because of the positive impact on sales delivery, we have to promote it more. That is why we take a special interest in this case on the 12th of May. Because we believe that what was intended by the Act and what has now transpired, there's a disjunction between the two. But the bottom line is that, yes, we will continue to promote it. Because somebody somewhere has a cell phone, they have a television, they have a radio, they can read for the people in the text link, they can hear in the bus. So we have been doing that, but not specifically, but it was part of the pack. But I think because of its impact, we have to find a way to profile so that those that need the service, that need the support, they can get that service. One of the partnerships that we created is with other associations, such as the Pro Bono Project at the Labor Court, where you have the Pro Bono Office of Nintendo Southwood that give free service to persons. We said, if someone comes to your office, who's asking for help in terms of enforcement, they fall within the threshold that we set because it's not to everybody. Please refer them to us. It is that strategic partnership I spoke about earlier on that we created to ensure that we achieve the most important thing called service. to us that's the key issue. So yes, I agree 100%. We have to confirm it. No. The next question was that there's going to be a significant increase in terms of cases, especially the threat of amendment and specifically called pay for enforcement. That's absolutely correct. Our predictions are exactly that the first year we've seen the upsurge, but we expect more because there are more people learn about, especially the equal pay for what is equal pay. Because there are some attempts people make when they want to convert the equal pay for work competitive into a form of a collective bargaining tool. It's not. So that this is a bribe issue, so it must be treated differently. But out of the campaigns that we've done, when we teach people about the new amendments, especially with the Section 108, 8G, and C, victim contract, labor broker, and part-time, once people learn and understand that, well, I've been a victim contract, I have not been told that I don't sign a contract below their threshold, but I continue to be a victim perpetually. So then they learn, actually, there are new requirements that have been introduced that if that's the case, and those requirements are not met, in fact, you can become a termination and give them personal justice. They cannot enforce that right unless they know. So when you teach what it means and how it applies, then you get an effect. So the campaign to us, more than that one, is also to expand it in terms of that. And when you do that, it has a direct impact on the cash flow. And when a case load increases, our budget group also gets diminished in the equation. So that's how the ripple effect works. And all we have is because our strategy also achieved in doing that overall. Because that's what it causes, ensuring that the labor rights and employment practices are in order. Now, the next question is, what services are you outsourcing? It is, I explained earlier on, it is about the job creation. What we've done is that we want to have a clean HR system in progress to ensure that the people who are doing the job are doing the right job and they're properly qualified for what they're doing. So we then, because at the time we do not have somebody in-house who can do this kind of exercise, we outsource that function. We say, can you do job creation for us? And then once we've done that, then from there we'll run it ourselves without contract, and then we'll continue. And that's what we've done. The other one is about developing a policy talent management and succession with employment equity. They do just that. Once the tool is developed, the contract ends at that, we take over, we run with it, so we don't have that. We actually supposed to end somewhere in June or July currently because the job is almost done. They've been there for almost a year. So if the company that does it, once their budget work is done, then we take it. But while we do that, we develop the resource internally. Because our plan is that if we bring an external source in the form of the consultant, in-house, we have to teach someone how to do that. So that next time there's a need arises, you don't bring the consultant again, we have a resource in-house that runs it from. So that's the kind of the training issue, there's the upskilling issue that comes with that issue. But when it comes to consultants, we use that as an exception. There is not a. Now, can we afford to extend licenses to subjects? No, and yes, actually. The issue is the following. There are two parts to it. Our view as the commission is that we get requests of SADC regions or member states in the SADC region asking to come into our state. One of the things that we enjoy is our case management system, which is welcome, and all our systems on how we do things. So they would want to have our case management system. Then we charge for it. You know, to the extent that we should, because it's not a free service. To give a case management system that we've developed over the years, it's branded by our intellectual property. If they want to enjoy that, we're selling it. To the extent that we're selling it, we can afford because we're getting, it's not intention to get profit, it's to be able to afford to deplete our resources in terms of what we do. So that's what we do. But in the normal course, the problems we involve, other than the case management, is exchange problems. They will come to the commission, we have money, we have resources. A few months ago, we sit there, they talk about what to do, we tell them about what to do, we exchange them, we give them lunch and accommodation, and then they go and they're fine. Then we can afford them. And that's what we've done. So there's nothing dramatic beyond it. If they want to make their software to themselves. That's what we said. The next one is the contradiction. Best advice is to utilize the resources we have. I fully accept that. Like I said, I wanted to be controversial. That's what I did, because I knew that part, it has those companies. But the problem, I did not explain it properly. I think my CFO will explain it properly, because our issue is about what we've got, the advice and the policy we create, that the resources we've got, in order for us to remain liquid, we have to manage our costs properly within the budget we've got. That's a key. Not only in terms of the cost containment, because we're compliant with the losses or the regulations, because it is the right thing. It is the right thing. So if you can avoid a flight to Johannesburg to the meeting in recent teleconference, then use teleconference. Because that's part of cost containment. That contributes to the overall cost containment principle. So yes, that's clear. So but the issue of the budget cut is coming because we didn't drop an extra cushion which is taken away, but we've expanded our resources to meet and now can maintain the part of the issue of context. That's the truth. I think the people can add in the
Thank you, Chair. The budgeting principles for the National Treasury are informed by the CPI. So when we're giving the MTEF percentages, it says that our expenses must be increased by 5.3, 5.6 around the average. So what we're saying is that, and Honorable Ollis mentioned it earlier, that we should not be complaining because in the past 3 years the budget, our budget has been increasing. That is very true, and the director has alluded to that. We were given a special funding as a result of the application that we did to the National Treasury to say to be able to fully implement the labor law amendments will need funding of such, and hence the funding that we got from financial year ending 2014-15-16 for the past 3 years was over and above the 5% for that additional amount, which is no longer the case. Now what we're saying is that the National Treasury expects us to increase our expenditure in line with CPI, which is an average of 5.3%. There are operational requirements that came as a result of labor law amendment that certain functions that we now have to do, which we're not doing in the past. So if you're comparing financials year on year, you'll actually get a skewed picture because there are additional functions that we are now doing. And again, what the director added on in terms of the training that we need to provide and awareness and so forth. So when he talks about the request for the additional funding, we do understand that we have to comply in terms of budgeting within the budget allocated or funding allocated to break even. The opportunity, though, that we have, which is in May, that the National Treasury provides to all departments and entities, is the application for additional funding. So we actually are looking forward to the period in May where we'll be doing the application for additional funding. We will be then explaining this process to say these functions that came as a result of labor law amendment, as also it was indicated in our presentation slide, functions coming from the essential services committees over and above that which they had to do in any case internally and so forth. So the submission that we'll be making in May, which all other entities and all other departments make, will be exactly indicating that we have done so much to be within budget in terms of the cost cutting. But in order for us to fully implement other aspects that have come as a result of the labor law amendment, in line with our mandate and so forth, we are requesting additional funding, and that opportunity will take advantage of in May.
Done.
and continue to doing it. So we are, it is part of the plan that we must cover all costs. But until then, anyone who's not accredited to do a case that includes management will not do the case, because it is in the interest of the parties. Because if you come before the parties, you are dealing with complex questions that you know very little about. The chances are going to make a wrong decision. That's the primary reason behind it, to make sure that you are fully equipped to deal with the matter. The other challenge is that the private sector, you know, you get very private attorneys who come there who have studied these amendments and come there with very technical arguments. If the commission is not up to the challenge, they're going to pressure the party and they're going to make a wrong decision. It is the only reason why we make it a condition that unless you are training those amendments, do not do a case that involves. But the plan is that every commissioner, current and those that are upcoming, we've included the amendment training as part of the new commissioners that come in. And the university in the province has also amended that should also cover them. And the next question was, has the director got a better plan to fully implement the employment equity? Oh, sorry, is there a link between the Cape Town visa and procurement issues with the director? I think the chairperson of the board has responded to the question that is the director. And then the question that says that whether we do have a plan to fully implement the employment equity plan, I think the transformation content on that slide you referred to is not about the employment equity plan in terms of the transformation of the workplace. It is other matters other than that. The issues of implementation of the employment equity plan form part of the department of labor in terms of enforcement and inspection. And it is not even the transition. The next one is on which universities are offering the university program. We've answered that question. What part of the program will commissioners be exempted from? It's the whole program. I think I've responded to the question. Why are commissioners not full-time? I think I've dealt with that question as well, because the statute of requirements don't have a discretion. And American question, workplace engagement model, which sector will be rolled out and when will it be done? I think it's similar with the question.
Person, the workplace mediation model, we are piloting it in conjunction with the food industry value chain roundtable, which is an initiative of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Food Policy and Fisheries and Food South Africa. So in terms of the arrangement we've made with them, we have commenced the pilot on the 1st of March in the fruit sector in the Western Cape. It will go for a period of 6 months, and we will then review it. It's at the end of that period, the review of the workplace mediation process is positive. We will then roll it out to the other fruit-producing provinces. At the same time that we're doing this, we're also talking to the wine industry value chain roundtable. And overall, the overall plan is to one day be able to offer this as a CCMA offering. It's going to take a lot of time to actually take the committee through what workplace mediation is, but we'd be happy to forward to the committee a presentation where it is very clearly illustrated. But just in a nutshell, what it is about is dealing with conflict in the workplace. So what happens is, if you look at the proposition that conflict in the workplace gives rise to problems, those problems, if left unsolved, then give rise to disputes. And that's where statutory dispute resolution comes in. But if you deal with problems in the workplace before they become disputes, then we are intervening very early and helping to manage conflict in the workplace. That's very small nutshell, but a nutshell all the same. Okay, then the next question dealt with the labor market conflict prediction tool and the workplace diagnostic tool. These are two very different things. Let me start off with the workplace diagnostic tool. The CCMA has a lot of interventions to basically deal with conflict in the workplace. Other than workplace mediation, we've got things called building workplace relations, managing conflict in the workplace, managing distance. These are all interventions to assist parties in the workplace, okay? But these are like, you know, a cabinet of medicines we have you know, that we'd been advertising in some way or the other. And we thought that to create demand for it, it would be great to have a diagnostic tool that can, that a workplace can actually complete. It would be web-based, it would also be paper-based. So by answering a series of questions, a workplace would be able to determine the level of conflict in that workplace and what intervention would actually be most appropriate. So it's there to create the demand for those interventions that we already have. The conflict prediction tool is something far bigger than that. This was conceptualized a few years ago, and it's really to say that we want a tool that will enable us to look at all the sectors across the economy. It's being developed as a mathematical model. That's the whole idea, to develop an algorithm looking at all the conflicts, all the predictors and the triggers of conflict in a sector, okay? And there's still a lot of work to be done on it, and I'm hoping that we can even build a prototype this year. If not, I might have to resign and walk away to the sunset. But one day when we have this thing in place, we'd be able to look at trends and be able to see rising conflict in sectors, and that will enable us to be more proactive in terms of our intervention. We're not talking about strikes, but I mean, now in retrospect we can see that in the years prior to Marikana, not even in the months, in the years prior to Marikana, there was a heating up of the mining sector. It wasn't going to tell you that something like Marikana was going to happen, but it would have alerted us to be more vigilant of the mining sector because something was going to happen. So that conflict prediction tool is actually based on tools that are used by other agencies to predict civil and armed civilian and armed conflict, you know, in war-torn areas and that type of thing. Hopefully we get it right. If we get it right, it's going to be something really fantastic to help us to be a lot more proactive in the work that we do. Thank you.
Madam Chair, the other question was about how many research reports and what kind of research support. Again, from Honourable Lema and Merrick. The number of research reports is 4. One, the international benchmark for professionalization of the labor sector, the national cooperative benchmark for conflict in the financial sector, the stakeholder consultative process reports, and the last one is the framework which is in the subject to consultation. So those are the other question was about the CSR campaigns and how many of them are 14. So how many measures in terms of the job saving limit and the work continues from the previous strategy to this one. Yes, it does. And also the measurement mainly is that the main test is against those, the number of persons facing this one. And then that's the test we need. But there's only the process to improve that. Because we want to do very well in this one. Because this is one thing that is seriously, you know, containing the values of our South African constitution. That's very, very important.
I think if I might just add to what my director said, we take the job saving very, very seriously. In the past few years, we've developed from what used to be, in terms of the legislation, the commissioner was really just expected to chair this meeting between the parties. Okay, we've developed a holistic, integrated approach where we are working in partnership with institutions like Productivity South Africa, like the IDC, like other institutions like that, to be able to help parties generate options in terms of you know, in terms of retrenchments. But all of this needs to be taken with a good dose of realism, because sometimes we can't get it right. Sometimes, you know, a business has failed completely. Sometimes a business is closing down. You know, and you know, a mine might close. You know, I mean, we're hearing stories about holding companies that are closing down, and a whole lot of people are going to be unemployed as a result of some people going to Dubai recently. But what I'm saying on a serious note is the reason why we look at figure, the unaudited figure is somewhere in close to 30% of the jobs that we have saved. Okay? But the reason we keep it at 20% is to compensate for those business failures where the business is closing and we can't save any of the jobs, and to balance that between some places where we've had exceptional success in redeploying and really assisting companies to come back using the short-term financial relief offered by the training layoff scheme, etc. Thank you.
What
did you
say, the, I don't remember what was this question. Has the people ever been called to live?
How can we be affected? Because it seems that if the CMA has taken over now the meeting. Is that a letter of the director indicating you should talk now and then you should talk now? Can you structure your responses such that this one responds and finishes, then the other one responds and finishes? Because in the manner in which you are responding, you won't know when I'm going to finish.
The questions are divided.
Yes.
So you are going according. How many questions are there?
Yeah,
how many people, which people are going to speak?
Process and meaning that all the
Members, we are almost done. You can pack your stuff while you are seated. We have 2 minutes, members. It's only minutes. Sorry, it's only 2 minutes. So we need, I suppose they have been sent to you, so we just want to adopt them. Another buffering, proposing them, another potential they can police are adopting it. And there is one formal part, I think a formal part about the draft report on UIF bill that is going to be read in less than a second, so that all the formalities are done.
Thank you, Chair. This is just a report that Chair has mentioned that we could